This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the U.S. response to the coronavirus pandemic. How is the Trump administration, which initially downplayed the threat of the pandemic, managing this crisis for which the United States has become the epicenter? Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel, coming to you from my makeshift home studio as we practice social distancing in the age of the coronavirus. We look forward to returning to the VOA microphones once health authorities deem it safe to do so. However, if it were up to U.S. President Donald Trump, the United States would wind down the social distancing rules currently in place, meant to suppress and slow the spread of the virus. He suggested he wants to reopen commerce around the beginning of the Christian holiday of Easter in mid-April. President Trump suggested that the aggressive measures to contain the disease were a ploy by political adversaries to undercut him or hurt his reelection bid, changed his tune in early March when he declared a national emergency. He went so far as to characterize himself as a wartime president. However, after only a couple of weeks in a war against the invisible enemy that may last many months, Mr. Trump is growing weary as he watches the stock market plunge and businesses lose revenues and employees. He worries that the so-called cure, the temporary but devastating measures to suppress the virus, including the shuttering of commerce, schools, and entertainment and travel, is worse than the disease. He wants the country to get back to work. However, most health experts say that before we can jumpstart the economy, return to our daily routines, it is imperative that we slow and stop the spread of the virus. Given the Trump administration's reluctance to take the threat of the coronavirus seriously from the beginning, critics say the United States has lost valuable time in producing viable test kits and other personal protective equipment for our frontline health workers. In fact, testing is in part the reason that large swaths of the U.S. population, approximately 170 million, according to the MSNBC TV network, have been advised to stay at home as much as possible, causing the very economic disruption Mr. Trump decries. In part to defend his administration's slow response, President Trump has said that this pandemic could never have been foreseen. And yet, U.S. intelligence agencies did, in fact, envision such a devastating phenomenon. According to a recent article by the Washington Post, U.S. intelligence agencies were issuing ominous classified warnings in January and February about the global danger posed by the coronavirus, while Mr. Trump and lawmakers downplayed the threat and failed to take action that might have slowed the spread of the pathogen. One official said the system was, quote, blinking red. In addition, early in its tenure, the Trump administration fired pandemic experts at the National Security Council and at the Department of Homeland Security to address the seismic economic impact of the coronavirus. The U.S. Senate just this week unanimously approved a $2 trillion emergency relief bill that attempts to minimize the financial havoc caused by the pandemic. This represents the largest economic rescue package in U.S. history. According to the Washington Post, this massive legislation, which passed 96-0, would, quote, send checks to more than 150 million American households, set up enormous loan programs for businesses, large and small, pump millions of dollars into unemployment insurance programs, greatly boost spending on hospitals, and much more, unquote. Well, joining me to discuss the U.S. response to the coronavirus pandemic via Zoom are our veteran political analysts, John Fortier, he's director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you,
Carol.
So, John, let's go to you first. Look, crisis comes to every president. We can't blame them. We can't blame President Trump for causing the coronavirus. But what matters is how presidents handle them. So let me ask you, how do you think the administration has handled the crisis thus far?
Well, let me start with the fact that unlike many other crises in the past, that our country is a very divided country. And the response to the president's response has been very divided. So we don't have as much rallying around the president as we might have in many other cases. And I'm sure Democrats will blame that on the president. And I think some Republicans are worried that Democrats are kind of knee-jerk reaction against the president no matter what he does. That's not a good situation, but I think that's where we are. First point is, this is a major crisis, one which all sorts of countries and all sorts of ways around the world are having trouble dealing with. Yes, we can point to some successes some places, but this is something that we didn't expect, and countries are struggling to keep up and is very serious and is going to get worse. The second point, I think, is we're going to have a hard time judging the performance of the president in real time here. I do believe that it is something that is going to affect his presidency. The idea that we're going to have this campaign for president on the terms that we were before is not true. And so we don't know to what extent the president is going to be hurt by this, either by his actions or by the fall of the economy, or secondly, whether there is some rallying around the president, maybe less than in other times, but certainly rallying around the president in a time of emergency. We will have to see, and we will have to see how we come out of this. But look, I think the president has done some things well and done some other things, you know, we could have done better. One thing that the president points to, and again, I think the country is divided about this, but the president points to him cutting off travel with China in a very early time, much earlier than Europe did. So that's something I think the president can point to. We also can point to the fact that the U.S. was slow on moving towards testing, and there were some false starts. I do think, though, that has come around in a way. Earlier would have been better in all circumstances. But the one thing I think the president has done fairly successfully has been marshaling the resources not only of the government and the state governments, but of the private sector. And the move towards lots more private sector work in the realm of testing has made the United States now, today, be a leader in testing. Again, all of this, I think the president will be judged as to how it goes as we go down the line. I think the president's too optimistic to say that he wants to have things opened up by Easter, although I don't think he said that as a definitive deadline. I think he's right to say that we are going to have to figure out how to have our economy and how to move back eventually. If he does so too rashly, I think that will be a big problem for the country and obviously for his fortunes. But that is something that we will have to wrestle with going forward. And clearly, the president does want the country to come together. Look, I think also governors have had significant leadership, governors on both sides. And, you know, interestingly, the president, I think, has had, aside from some side comments here and there, some actually decent relationships with the governors. And there is a sense that the Congress and the governors and the president are at least pushing in a direction that's helpful. But again, this is a terrible crisis, one that's only going to get worse. And, you know, we'll have to see at the end of the day how we judge the response.
Jim Kessler, turning to you for your take on the U.S. response to this coronavirus pandemic, the Trump administration in particular. What mistakes do you think the administration made or would have done differently? Or what positive aspects, like John Fortier talked about, do you think characterized the response?
I think the president got off to a slow start on this, a very slow start. And this is one of those crises where time is not a friend. And that slow start, I think, is going to be lethal for people's physical health in this country, and it's going to be very damaging for the economy. He started, when this crisis was gathering, as being not a believer. He wasn't really taking it that seriously. He was very, very much downplaying it for far too long. Look, if he was a 19-year-old, he would have been one of the kids on the beach in Florida during spring break. And there are a lot of people in this country who, especially early on, did not think that this was going to be that serious. Since then, he has mostly come around, but we wasted valuable, valuable time. I want to give him credit and the administration credit on a few things. First of all, the Federal Reserve, which is independent, but the Federal Reserve has reacted aggressively to try and stabilize the financial sector and to inject money into the economy and to protect businesses, and did it at a faster pace and at higher levels of spending than even during the financial crisis of 2008. So the Fed deserves some high marks. The stimulus package that was negotiated by Speaker Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, Chuck Schumer, and the White House, particularly Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, that is a good opening package that will help people. It's going to provide direct payments to tens of millions of Americans. It's boosting unemployment so that people will receive close to what they would normally get. It is going to hopefully keep businesses having folks on the payroll as much as possible and prevent the shuttering of small businesses and large businesses as well. So once it was taken seriously, they've snapped into shape. We're still behind in some areas. I disagree with John. We're not leading on testing. We're still far behind. I know people who probably have the virus and can't get tested, and some of them are in worsening shape. The president is still wanting not to believe this and is being steered back by his aides to take it seriously. So you see the president giving very conflicting signals, which I think is confusing to a lot of people and to a lot of leaders, you know, mayors and governors in different parts of the country. So in America, you're seeing very patchwork responses. Some of the governors have done a tremendous job on this. Democratic governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, has been spectacular on this. New York is one of the epicenters of the crisis. Republican governor Mike DeWine of Ohio has been another true star there and is reacting with speed and precision. Florida Republican governor DeSantis is acting, I think, irresponsibly. And the problem with this virus is it doesn't take too many people and leaders to act irresponsibly for the calamity to spread. But I think the goal for America is to limit the public health damage that this can cause. I agree with John. We're at the opening stages of this crisis. Hopefully, the economy can bounce back, and do believe that the administration, the Congress, and the Federal Reserve are doing mostly the right things right now to increase those odds as best as possible. And then one final thing that we are going to need to do, and a little bit more long term, is this country and this world has had two once-in-a-century financial shocks in the space of 12 years, and it's time to stop thinking of these as black swan events. I think in the age of globalization and digitalization, these are going to occur more often. How do you shock-proof economies?
And we need leaders who believe in working together to either manage well or try to prevent these types of crises from happening to begin with. But first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, Director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. And we're discussing the U.S. response to the coronavirus pandemic. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Now here's a shout out to a valued Facebook fan, Dr. Radia Ishak from Sana'a, Yemen. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, John Fortier, to talk more about how the Trump administration and the Congress are managing this crisis. We know that the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, has been designated to take the lead. There's also the Coronavirus Task Force led by Vice President Mike Pence. Nonetheless, there seems to be a lack of strong central coordination that the governors, many of whom Jim Kessler mentioned, want to see. Despite the very important role that each governor is taking, there seems to be no substitute for the executive branch in the case of this kind of natural and economic disaster. How is that going in your view? Do you think that the administration is doing enough? People talk about the Defense Production Act, which could be not just invoked, but activated, that could, for example, mitigate shortages of vital medical supplies, such as the N95 masks and ventilators, which I don't think the administration has yet actually activated. What's your take?
Well, we are a country that is a federal country. We have leadership at the national government with the president and administration and Congress, and then also at the state level. And I agree with Jim. We've had some really stellar governors, and some of them have really taken a lead. And practically speaking, governors are going to have to be part of this. Our system is not one where we're going to have direct federal interaction as much with the people as much as it is driven by states and administered by locals. That's the way it's going to be. So I think, look, there have been some bumps in the road, and I agree with Jim that there are some stars in the governor's realms and some people who have fallen short. But I do think that the relationship is working okay. I mean, not perfect, but I think many people thought that the relationship would be worse. And the executive branch and the federal government and the president and the task force working with governors, I think, has been broadly successful. Now, is there enough? First of all, this is a major crisis, and it's never clear to me that there's enough. And especially in some of the hotspots, we are facing some very, very serious challenges coming up quickly, serious shortages, and we need to deal with them. I mean, there have been a lot of things done well, and I don't want to focus too much on the Defense Production Act. It has been invoked, and then there's a question of whether the president is going to use it in certain cases. Lots of things have been done. And I fear for New York. New York is the epicenter. It's our largest city. And it's where things are starting to happen and will be happening more in a bad way in the next week and going forward. And they're going to need resources, ventilators and masks and places, hospital beds. I think we've made a good start in that. We'll have to see. Unfortunately, I think we'll judge after the fact whether we've done very well. I mean, some of what the president points to is innovative, that we've used the private sector and surveyed resources and tried to find or make what we need, cutting through a lot of regulatory tape. That's not the whole story, and the one Republicans point to more, but there are ways in which we've allowed certain tests to go forward much more quickly, the use of different types of ventilators from the anesthesiology field be converted to use in a more traditional setting. Look, I think there are lots of efforts going. The president is, I think, working very hard on this. Governor Cuomo, in this case, is working very hard and doing a great job and calling for more. I'm not clear that we're going to get there. All that we need to do more. And lots has been done, which I think people have stepped up to the challenge. But it's a challenge that if you think about where we were, where the whole world was 3 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, the idea that we've done all of this change and social distancing and shutting down our economy and now trying to ramp up is an incredible thing, but it requires that sort of effort. And again, I think we've made a good start, but you tell me at the end of the day, when we look back, can we judge whether we made it or not? We will see.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, despite the fact that the U.S. has stepped up, this is the United States of America and people are looking for leadership. Now, with respect to the governors, as you have all said, we are a federal system. The governors have a lot of autonomy, but many of them are saying that in a crisis of this magnitude, they still need strong coordination and central support from the federal government. One of those tools is this so-called Defense Production Act, which would allow the U.S. government to compel companies to make, for example, the N95 masks and other equipment, ventilators, to help the states grapple with the shortages. What's your take on this degree of support or lack thereof from the federal government to our state governments?
I'm a little baffled about why the Defense Production Act has not been invoked. It seems like this is the perfect situation for it. And the arguments that I've seen against it have not been very convincing to me. I do think that we are handling this better than we were 6 weeks ago. The governors have for sure been the star, or a bunch of governors have been stars. And in some ways, that's very much appropriate because this feels very different depending on where you are. So, you can be in certain parts of the country and it's just a beautiful blue sunny day out there and very, very few people have the virus and it feels very remote. And in other places, it just feels very different and that's going to spread. So New York is the center right now. Well, Louisiana might be the center very soon and Florida might become a center and these hotspots are going to jump from place to place. I think when we reverse engineer this, we go back in time after this is all done and we reverse engineer it. I think the main criticism of Donald Trump's handling of this would be that they waited too long, that they did not see this as a serious threat for a period of 4 to 6 to 8 weeks. And when they could have reacted with a lot more definitiveness and alarm and aggressiveness, they really, really held back. And I have some criticisms right now with what President Trump is saying, like the, let's get people back to work by Easter. Wouldn't it be great if the churches were all filled up? No, that would be very bad if the churches were all filled up on Easter Sunday. But for the most part, what the administration and the Congress is doing right now and what most governors are doing right now is pretty effective. The problem was they got off the starting line far too late. And that is going to be so damaging to people's personal health and so damaging to the economy. And really, the president's main job in these sort of crises is to make the judgment call at the appropriate time of when it's time to react quickly. He's not a guy who believes in the science, and he just dithered and didn't take it seriously for too long. And I think it's just going to have very negative ramifications for the country.
So back to you, picking up on that, John Fortier. Analysts do say that more widespread, very early and systematic testing could have contributed greatly to combating the virus, to have actually prevented the very draconian social distancing rules that are now in place that Mr. Trump decries and is saying that they're hurting the economy. So I think we do have to be careful about treating the cause and the symptoms. But let's go to the symptoms of this horrific pandemic. Now, we have a relief bill, this $2 trillion bill that's going to help local governments, businesses large and small, hospitals. We have direct cash payments. What's your assessment of this package? We either have to do more or really step up much more systematically in containing this virus, because it is that which needs to be stopped, which will then help the economy get us all back to work.
Well, it is the right thing to do. And I agree with Jim that the Fed's actions also were very important. We don't know if it's enough, and there certainly may need to be more. It's an incredibly dramatic package, but it's addressing an incredibly dramatic crisis. And look, I broadly give credit all across the board. Yes, we had a little bit of politics, but guess what? Congress is a political branch, and we're talking about major changes, many of which would have been opposed strongly by Republicans. Other parts would have been opposed strongly by Democrats. There may be some grumbling, but we did move a major, very large package. Now, I give credit to people across the aisle. And again, the small bit of bickering, if you want to call it, back and forth over several days for a package this size by a deliberative body is something that I think we'll forget about.
Exactly. Well, turning to you, Jim Kessler, the Democrats did hold out for more amendments in the beginning. They were criticized by Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and some other Republicans. But do you think that by holding out for some amendments, that they may have improved the bill? How do you see it, particularly the Democrats' contribution?
I agree with John. This is a $2.2 trillion bill that was constructed in basically 96 hours. So don't expect perfection. And it is a political body, so expect political gamesmanship in there. And we certainly saw that in the Senate negotiations between Democrats and Republicans and between Chuck Schumer, the Democratic leader, and Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader. And it got heated and ugly over the weekend. So be it. I think the changes that were made that Democrats insisted upon improved the bill. I think some of the changes that Republicans insisted upon improved the bill. And probably some of the changes that each insisted upon didn't improve the bill. And one thing I want to say is this is going to get picked apart and criticized. No one is going to, in the end, be patted on the back and said, you did a great thing. We are spending $500 billion or thereabouts bailing out companies, some of them very, very large companies. Nobody comes to the United States Congress or enters the realm of public policy saying, gee, I want to bail out Boeing or the cruise line or the airlines. But you know what? It had to be done because 36% of Americans work at a company that employs more than 2,500 people. By the way, 39% work at a company that employs less than 100 people. And they both have mortgages and they both have spouses and kids and tuition to pay and healthcare coverage. And to keep people in their jobs, this Congress had to do things that they would never, ever do, both on the left and on the right. And when they did this in 2008, when they had to bail out the banks, and listen, no one wanted to do that either, but it needed to be done. You had to save the banks to save the economy. Today, you have to save businesses to save the economy. What we are learning is that businesses, big and small, are a little bit more fragile than people believe. If you shut down their revenue stream for a couple of weeks, or God forbid, a couple of months, they go under. So you need to do something to keep them infused. And of course, you need to do something for all of the people employed there. And I think this was a very good package. And I commend everybody that was involved in putting it together. And I criticize everybody who's opposing it.
All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have on this edition of our program. I want to thank you both, John Fortier, Director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, as always, thanks so much for our terrific conversation via Zoom. I look forward to talking with you in a couple of weeks to discuss the impact this crisis is having on the 2020 Democratic primaries and preparations for the general election. I look forward to that.
Me too. Stay healthy.
Thanks. Same to you both. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter, when we will be discussing the impact of COVID-19 on the continent of Africa. It's next week on The Voice of America.